the driver's door, ran out the side of the car, across the front of it, and jumped right off the side of the bridge in front of me.
The only people that really pulled over were truckers.
He said, "We're going Hodge," and he didn't slow down. He went across the median onto the oncoming traffic, but where they could see him coming, they just got out of the way.
I noticed his plane was really low. He went right in front of us, hit the fence, and it spun around. You know, 30 seconds more, he could have hit us.
And I went around that truck, and a guy stepped out from behind the truck and threw a piece of wood, and it shot through my window just like a spear and stuck in the back of the cab of my truck.
That's probably one of the stranger things I've seen.
Welcome to the show, everybody. You're listening to Hammer Lane Legends. I am Tony Merkel.
And I'm Lemongrass Gogolach.
And we're really glad that you're here. If you have a crazy and wild story from the road that you want to share with us on the show, go ahead and shoot us an email. Our email address is hammerlanelegends@gmail.com. That's hammerlanelegends@gmail.com. Or go to the website, hammerlanelegends.com. Hit the contact section and you can reach us that way as well. Either way works for us. Just get a hold of us. And, you know, if you're out on the road, and you hit some bad weather, and you're thinking, you know, I should really have some emergency supply food in my truck, so if I ever get stuck, I have food. Or if the government ever decides to shut down the country again, and people don't want to let us truckers in drive-thrus, and we walk up to the drive-thru, and they say, no service without a car, well, we need to have some food in those situations. So go to preparewithhll.com. That's preparewithhll.com. And you can get emergency supply food right there. They come in 5-gallon buckets. They last up to 25 years. And you can get a whole month worth of supply of food for a great deal. So if you want to go to preparewithhll.com, you can get that emergency preparedness food. And it's a good idea. What do you think, Dad?
I think it's a great idea. Yeah. I think that is, you know, you can never be too safe or too, you cannot be over prepared.
Absolutely. And that's what I think too. In fact, me and Lindsay were thinking about maybe trying to come up with some kind of emergency bag that we can then offer on the website through Hammer Lane Legends, where it's like just supplies that you would need if you're out there and you break down, you know, like a warming blanket, you know, just different things that, you know, you could really use in the cab, you know? I don't know if anybody's ever done this, but I heard it works, and I don't know if it works, but I heard if you have a candle inside of a tin can and you light it in the cab, the heat in that tin can will radiate then throughout the cab and warm the cab. It sounds really simplistic. I'd be interested to see if it works. Maybe one of these days I'll test it in the truck and see, you know, if it actually, you know, on my 30 minute break or something, yeah, like that, test it and see. But, you know, as a driver, I always, especially during the winter months, I start thinking about, you know, bringing an extra bag with me in case, mm-hmm, I get stuck. The one time I was in Bensalem, Pennsylvania, and we go up and we were expecting snow that day, but it wasn't supposed to be that bad. And then it shifted, the storm shifted, and down where the terminal is, they just pretty much got drizzle and some wet snow. Mm-hmm. But literally an hour north where I was, it was dumped. We had like 12 inches of snow. And fast, by noon, I mean, I had 8-9 inches on the ground. And I call it in. I'm like, guys, I got to come back in or else I'm not coming back. And down there, they're like, it's not that bad. What are you talking about? I'm like, I'm telling you, this is bad up here. And so I started bringing it back. And I can't tell you how many times I got stuck. In fact, I remember when I decided to take it back, I knew the quickest way to get to the turnpike. That was dumb. I should have taken the most efficient way,
yes,
to get to the turnpike. And so I'm on this side street, you know, where I just tried doing a delivery and they were closed. And I made a right-hand turn. This is so stupid. I'm embarrassed to even say this. But it was a rookie move, for sure, a rookie move. I pull out of this place and I make a right-hand turn to go in the direction I wanted to go. The problem is, making the right-hand turn, I got to go uphill over a bridge.
Yeah.
It's like one of those things where I was so like focused on, okay, I just gotta get back. I wasn't thinking about how I was gonna get back. And then I made that right hand turn. Just as I'm making a right hand turn, I'm like, what am I doing? And by the time I could even do anything. There's a line of cars behind me, and I'm like trying, I'm trying to get up this hill, and it's not working. The truck's starting to slide back down the hill, and I'm like, I'm gonna hit somebody. And then it did, it stopped. Like, it built up enough snow or something like that, it stopped on the hill. So I'm sitting facing uphill trying to go over a bridge that's probably frozen anyways, and I have cars behind me, and the longer I'm there, the more the cars are coming up behind me. And I get out of the truck and I talk to the car behind me, like, you gotta back up, this, that, and the other. And believe it or not, and this is like the Philly area, Bethsalem is just outside of Philadelphia. It's we call it upper northeast Philadelphia. It's not even really a different town. It's still Philly. So I get out and I'm talking to these people, and surprisingly they were pretty cool about it. I think there's something about a bad snowstorm that makes everybody say, we're in it together, you know? Yeah, like exactly. Like a coronavirus. No. We're all in it together. Yeah, okay. Anyways, we're not gonna go down that road today.
Good choice.
So I get out, and the one guy actually got out and got cars stopping, because what I had to do is I had to back down the hill and turn back into the road that I came out of. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I don't know how this is going to work. Am I going to slide? What? And so I got all the cars out of my way that I felt comfortable backing up, and I got it backed up, and I turned it around, and I head the other way. And I got stuck a couple times getting to the turnpike, and then I'm going down the turnpike, and I'm literally going down the turnpike 25 miles an hour on the turnpike. And that was like, you know, I felt like I was going too slow. But at the same time, I felt like I was going too fast. You know, it's one of those situations like, I'm going 25 miles an hour, and I know it's really slow, but I feel like I'm going too fast, you know? Yeah. And so I had a line of vehicles behind me. And now, granted, the turnpike was only one lane at that point. Mm-hmm. And so the snow in the passing lane was there. Nobody was going through that. And so if you're behind me, you're behind me. Well, I had some, you know, tough guy truckers thinking that I was going to, so which I probably was, but it is what it is. I'm the captain of this line.
That's right. You know? So,
but they're like, we're going to pass him. And the one guy comes up and he's passing me. He gets up where his truck is right next to my truck. We're parallel. Mm. And all of a sudden, it was at that moment, this trucker realized he effed up. And he now is just coasting next to me, because he's scared to go any faster.
Right.
And he starts coming to the right. And I'm like, bro, you're going to have to hit me, because I'm not going to pump my brakes and slide out of control because you're an idiot, and I ain't going to speed up so you can get behind me. So I don't know what you're going to do, but you're going to have to hit me. And eventually he was able to get behind me again. And then again, another truck did the same exact thing twice. It happened where they got up next to me and they're like, oh crap, this isn't good. And then they just start coming over to the right. Like I'm going to do something for them. I'm like, bro, hit me. Because if I'm going to have an accident, it's because you hit me.
Yep.
That's it. You know?
And it's a non-chargeable.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, it ain't my truck.
Right.
You know, bro, do what you got to do, but I got to do what I got to do. And it's going 25 miles an hour down the turnpike. Yep. Okay. So in that little story I just gave you and stuff, we have, you know, situations that pop up on the road that we're like, you know, I'm not so sure I'm going to make it home tonight. Not that I'm going to die, but I might be stuck. And in those kind of situations, we want to make sure we have some stuff in the cab.
Look, 10 years ago, there was an accident on the highway that I take to get to my house. And I sat there after a snowstorm, and it was backed up, and I sat there for 13, 14 hours.
Yeah.
I did not get home until the next day.
Yeah.
And if you're in a truck and you get stuck in a situation like that and you have food in your truck, if not, maybe this is a way to go.
Yeah.
At least you've got something you can at least cook up for yourself while you're sitting there with your brakes are set and you're just sitting.
Yeah. And the 5-gallon bucket you can actually take a dump in. So it's great. Nice.
I don't know if that's like an advertising thing that they're really looking for.
I mean, we all have those trash bags in our trucks from the gas stations. Just line the container, take your dump, you know? You got to do what you got to do, you know? And speaking of dumps, let me tell you another story. let me tell you another story. I got one for you. So I was a few weeks ago, I had to go do a trailer drop in Westchester at a place called Omni Cable. And it's easy. It's time consuming, especially if you get there early. And I did get there early. I mean, I'm in Boyertown at 3:15, and he told me to do Omni Cable. So I get there at 4:15. Mm-hmm. I don't back in until 6:30. And so, you know, I order dinner delivered to my truck.
That's
a great way to go. You know, DoorDash. Shout out to DoorDash. If you want to be a sponsor of the show, just holler at me, my boy. So, you know, I get there and I eat my dinner. I finally back in and I go back to the end of my trailer to chalk the wheel. And there, I kind of had to do a double take because I look at the ground, there's a piece of paper and I'm like, what the heck? And inside the paper is what I first thought was mud. It wasn't mud though. You see, Omni Cable, ever since this virus kicked off, they tell all the drivers, you're not allowed to come in at all. We're not allowed to go in at all.
Right.
And so we're not allowed to use the bathrooms. And a lot of places recently that I've been noticing that have those policies, they actually got porta potties outside so right. that, you know, people can go to the bathroom at least, especially if you know you have a bunch of truckers coming in all day that, yeah, you know, have to sit there and wait. They don't do this. And so it was an A. Dewey pile receipt. And and so now
now
me and the other drivers who saw it and stuff, we're calling them A. Duty pile. I mean, how great is that? I mean, the company's name is A. Dewey Pile. You take a dump in your receipt as a, you know, probably like a vengeance kind of thing. It's like, oh, you don't want to let me go in the bathroom? Okay, I'm gonna throw it right here. And so we're gonna call them A. Dewey Pile now. So shout out to them. So, anyways, that's a long intro. Dad, who do we have on the show today?
Today we're talking to Tom. He's a short-term driver. He hasn't been out there for a long time, but he did a little bit of over-the-road stuff. And now he's doing some dedicated stuff, and he likes being the being home every day, which is good for him. He's just got some interesting stories, things to talk about. And we do a lot of, I think there's going to be a lot of conversation about the industry today.
Yeah. You know? It was a good conversation.
Yeah.
And it was just three guys sitting down to chit chat, and I enjoyed it. So let's get to it right now. All right, today we got Tom on the show. Tom, how you doing, man?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you doing?
Doing good. So, Tom, I know we said this earlier and stuff off air, but I want to get it on air. Where are you from, man?
I'm from Arkansas originally, but I'm living in Colorado right now.
Okay. What brought you out to Colorado?
My wife. I actually met her online while I was in Afghanistan.
Wow.
Yeah, we actually met over Facebook.
Really?
Yeah. She was an army buddy of mine's cousin's friend. And we just kind of hit it off.
So what are you doing? Facebook profile stalking? And you're like, oh, I like this one. How'd you guys meet?
Not really.
I mean, how do you meet somebody on Facebook? I got married in 2007. I met my wife when I was 18. Like I never lived in a time where I was single and there were dating apps and Facebook profiles and all that stuff. How do you meet somebody on Facebook? I don't understand how that works.
I think it was just like commenting on my some picture on my buddy's timeline thing. And then she popped in on it. I can't remember exactly how it happened. We just kind of connected like that.
Interesting. Yeah, that's interesting, man. I mean, this whole world is so new to me. It's just...
Oh, he's so old, you know. Tony's an old man.
Thanks for joining the conversation, Dad. Appreciate it. Welcome to the show.
Well, you know what? You're talking about things like, I mean, when I dated your mom, there wasn't computers.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, we weren't even going down that road. So there was no cell phones. Yeah. There was none of that. So there was no hope. Not like that.
Yeah. No,
but that's cool.
I don't know. I find it interesting because, I mean, if Lindsay ever, you know, God forbid, wasn't in the picture anymore, the idea of even dating is like, it's just so... I don't know. It's so exhausting to even think about. And it's supposedly it's easier because you have all these apps, but it's like there's too many choices, too many options. Like I think I would just go hide in a cave somewhere, raise my kids there and pat them on the butt at 18 and off you go. Go figure it out. I'm going to be here at the cave, though.
Caveman's going to be here. Like,
I'm going to go Fred Flintstone on it, you know? Anyways, Tom, welcome to the show. Great. Go ahead,
Tom. How long have you been married? We're sorry. Go ahead.
It's actually 6 years last week.
Oh, that's really cool. Happy anniversary belated.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's really cool. That's great. You have any kids yet?
Yeah, we have two together, and then she had one before.
Okay. Very cool.
So the ages are 14, 4, and what, 9 months now?
Wow.
Yeah,
nine months. That's a spread.
Yeah.
So, Tom, you're driving truck, right? Who do you drive for?
I drive for one of the bigger carriers, but I'm dedicated with Target right now.
Okay. So you just do like Target?
Yeah. Go from the DC to the different stores. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm mostly in Colorado, but sometimes, like today, I'm going to Cheyenne.
Where's that?
Cheyenne, Wyoming.
Wyoming. Oh, Wyoming. I don't know. I grew up in Pennsylvania. I don't know these things.
I'm sorry, Tom.
I'm a local driver, okay? I've never gone anywhere other than the Philadelphia area, okay?
Pardon me. Country music?
Not a whole lot.
Country music in the 90s and George Strait.
Mm-hmm.
There's a song about Cheyenne.
Oh, okay.
Just listen to that and you'll have a good understanding.
Gotcha.
I'm just giving you a hard time.
That's fine.
I only did over the road for like 3 months. Yeah. My family was actually in California. We moved down to California so the wife could be closer to her family, and then she remembered she hates her family.
I love that.
So we had to get out of there. I was talking to a driver down at the terminal in San Diego. He's talking about a Target account out of Pueblo, Colorado. Like, oh, sweet. But I had to like move here to get my address in Pueblo so I could transfer there. That was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
So I get to be home almost every night.
That's good. That is awesome. I like that. That's how mine is. I'm home every day. Same with Tony, but I drive at night, then I'm home every morning.
I wonder, I know there's drivers out there that prefer to be over the road and stuff, mm-hmm. but I often wonder what the ratio is of drivers that are in the industry. No matter what you are in the industry, you're in the industry of driving truck. And how many drivers prefer to be over the road versus home every night? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, and then also compare that to the actuality of how many drivers do we have that are over the road versus home every night? Because
right.
when you see the difference in the numbers, so say you have 50% of people want to be over the road, 50% want to be home, but the numbers show that 80% are over the road and 20% are home, there's a good, 30% of people who maybe aren't too happy with their jobs at that point. I've often wondered about that kind of stuff because I think it actually contributes to the industry, the quality of the industry, because the more drivers that you have that are unhappy with their situation, it's going to reflect out in the road. It's going to reflect on how we perform at locations, how we interact with our customers, all that stuff,
Yeah.
And I don't know, passing thoughts while I'm driving.
Well,
that does make sense.
Yeah, no, go ahead, Tom.
No, I was just saying, that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. I mean, when you look at the over-the-road trucking companies, it's almost a revolving door of drivers going in and out.
Yeah.
In my experience, at least, and I don't know, I can't speak for other companies, but at the company that we work at, drivers come in there and they pretty much stay for a long, long time. It's not a revolving door that way. They're always looking for more drivers, but that's because there's a driver shortage and freight is there. But in the over the road, companies, you have that, revolving door where they're always looking for drivers. That's why they've gotten to a point where they're willing to train. They're willing to, but you got to sign on for 6 months. Well, if it's, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like there's that revolving door there that I don't think too many people are as enthused about being over the road as they used to be.
Yeah.
Because that was a normal part of the trucking industry back then.
And I also wonder, when it comes to the guys who are owner-operator, they're not attached to any specific company, and they're over the road. But if they had the choice to make the money they make over the road being local and home every day,
right,
as an owner operator, would they choose to do that?
Yeah, that's a good question.
You know what I mean? Because yep. I just think that there definitely are people who just want to be out on the road, whether they're single or just hate their wives and kids, you know? I think that because, I mean, interacting with drivers and stuff in the industry, I often come across a lot of guys who just are miserable.
Yeah.
And I just wonder what makes them so miserable. And certainly there's many factors, but one of them almost positively is their job, mm-hmm. their situation that they're working in. And I just wonder if, you know, the industry would improve in quality if the drivers that were in the industry were happy with their situation in the industry.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Because and maybe the reason why I'm saying this is because I would say probably about 3 or 4 years ago, I probably hit the worst part of my life in the industry mm-hmm. where I was miserable. I hated every part of my job. The long hours, I enjoyed the driving, but it was like the long hours, not having a life, not knowing when I'm going to be home. The idea that I knew I had a kid coming. So this is before Ben was here. Mm-hmm. I knew I had a kid coming, and I knew I grew up in a household with a truck driver. I knew what that offered for the kid. And I was like, I don't want to do that. I want to make sure I'm around for my kid, all that stuff. And, I really started hating everything, and I was miserable. But right now, current time, I'm probably the happiest I've ever been in the industry, but I'm also working the least amount of hours I've ever worked in the industry as well.
Right.
I'm doing hardly any overtime. I have a local run. So I leave my house, I drive 20 minutes to the terminal, and I start making my way back to the town that I live in. And so I'm local, I'm home a lot more than I used to be. And it makes me happy, mm-hmm. you know? And so I just wonder if the situation that drivers find themselves in the industry, making them so miserable, contributes to the quality of the mm-hmm. industry. Because I know my quality with my customers, how I drive, how I operate throughout my day has dramatically improved because I'm happier.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Well, what drove you to do a dedicated run like you're doing now, Tom? What, you know, from coming from over the road to having a dedicated run where you're home every day, was that kind of your thought process too?
Yeah, I pretty much just wanted to be home with the kids more.
Sure, that makes sense.
Piper was growing like a weed. She's still growing, of course. You know, Amber's growing. I don't want to. You know, I was just missing too much.
Sure.
You know.
Yep. Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's a common thing for a lot of guys that go local and stuff. I mean, because the idea of driving across the country for me and seeing the country and learning whatever town we were talking about that I didn't know about, that you guys were ragging on me about.
Cheyenne.
That town. I mean, that's appealing to me, to see the country, see the sights, just be out in the open road and doing that is appealing to me.
Right.
But the thing that is not appealing is not being around my family, and that it dramatically overweighs the appealing factor of driving across the country.
Right, right, exactly.
If I was single, I may have no desire to be local because it's physically more work. Mm-hmm. I mean, Tom, I'm assuming being a local driver, you probably notice the difference between the physical work you do, right?
Not really, actually. It's actually kind of a sweet gig. We don't unload anything. We just pull up to the store. We just switch the trailers out and go. It takes me usually about 2 minutes. Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, dropping hook.
That's great. I'm over here pulling 2,000-pound pallets of tile to the back of my trailer because the customer doesn't have a dock. And I'm, you know, it's like 100 degrees out, and they're like, we don't have a dock. Oh, great.
Yeah.
And then it's like, hey, can you help me pull this? We're not allowed on your truck. Oh, that's cute. You know, one of my favorite is I'll back into a dock and I'll have a really heavy skid and they have a forklift, mm-hmm. but they won't drive on the truck. They're not allowed to drive on the truck. It baffles my mind yeah. as to how some companies think that a forklift can't go on a truck because it's too heavy.
Wow.
I'm like, how do you think they load this truck?
Yeah, how do you think that got on there?
Yeah.
I mean, when it's all said and done, you have a full load and you have, you know, you scale out at 75,000 or 80,000 pounds, and you think your 5,000 pound tow motor can't go on there?
Right.
I mean, really?
Yeah.
I wonder if they might have had issues with people damaging trailers with the forklifts.
That's probably more
their own employees. You should see our trailers.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, yeah. It doesn't matter.
You know.
I have people that don't know how to drive them into poking holes in the trailer.
Yeah, that's exactly. I'm sure you're right. That's probably a really good explanation to that problem.
Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, if you're a company that has, you know, if you don't have a ton of, like these smaller LTL companies, if somebody, a customer drives in the truck, they poke a hole through the wall, I imagine they would, that carrier company would make a bigger stink about it than a bigger company like Pitt, Ohio.
Yeah.
Because Pitt, Ohio's like, whatever. We can fix it. We have other trailers like this. But if you're limited, you know, on your number of equipment that you have to begin with, like, I think there's a company in our area, in like South Philadelphia area, I forget the name of the company, but I think it's their only location because they're in the name, it's Philadelphia something. And so I think it's an LTL carrier, but it's local and it's not that big. So I imagine companies like that would make a bigger deal about a customer damaging their trailer than say Estes or Pitt, Ohio, or, you know, Roadway, whatever.
Yeah exactly.
So Tom, what kind of freight are you pulling around again? I can't remember.
It's just general merchandise.
Okay.
I'm running for Target.
That's what it was, Target. So just general merchandise. So how heavy do those loads get, though? I mean, I imagine some things, obviously, with Target, it gets heavy. But when I think about a Target load, I just think that it's probably pretty light. You probably can pull that pretty easily, yeah?
Yeah. The heaviest I've really had was like 35,000.
Okay.
That's not right. Yeah, usually it's like between like 15,000 and 30,000, somewhere in there.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's
bad.
Yeah, it's not bad at all. In fact, I'll tell you, this past week I pulled out of my terminal with a full trailer load that was just over 6,000 pounds. I was cruising. I was like, this is easy. Bring on the hills. I'm good.
Wow.
My dad's just sitting here shaking his head.
Whatever.
Yeah, so some of the loads I pull back, a lot of times I'll pull just like old pallets and stuff away from the stores. Those are usually pretty light.
Right.
So Tom, you were in the military, and I think in 2003 you joined the National Guard. You were deployed to Kosovo for 1 year, and when you were in the military, you became a combat engineer. Did you drive in the military at all?
It wasn't really like big trucks. It was just like, you know, Humvees. And when I got into the combat engineer stuff, I was driving around MRAPs.
Gotcha. So tell me some stuff about the military, man. I know you emailed me some stories. You were deployed. I know you were deployed in Afghanistan from 2011 to 2012, but you saw some pretty cool stuff. And you know, I, for instance, I don't know if this is cool or not, but you mentioned how you were hit by an IED. What happened there, man?
Oh yeah, that was actually pretty early on in the deployment. That particular mission, I was assigned dismount, so I was just sitting in the back of a truck. You know, my job was to get out if we needed to like manually clear something or, you know, anything like that. So I was just sitting in the back of the truck all day. Someone else had found an IED, so we went to secure it. This was so early, we didn't even have the, you know, capability of blowing the IEDs yet ourselves. So we had to wait for EOD to get out there and clear that. The whole time we're hearing chatter about a firefight, you know, a few clicks away. So as soon as EOD finally got out there and cleared the thing, we moved out to try to help these other guys and clear for them. And this is pretty late in the day, like almost sunset. We went down into this little ravine. My truck was about four or five trucks in the convoy, and we just you know, it was like a car wreck, really. We were just going 1 minute, and the next minute we were stopped. I didn't hear anything. Every little speck of dust was in the air. I thought the fire extinguishers had gone off. Like, you know, just, I took a second to look around, figure out what happened. Like, oh, we just hit an ID. Oh, my God. It was crazy. It actually hit pretty close to underneath me. But these, the MRAPs are designed with this V-shaped hole. So the when an explosion goes off, it kind of directs the force of the explosion up and out. You know, it kind of minimizes the impact on the inside. But it took the passenger side rear tire and flung it about 50 meters off the road. This is a big tire too, like, you know, probably a good 4 feet tall. And of course, it blew all the little cargo areas on the outside of the vehicle everywhere. There's MREs everywhere, just scattered. The crater was probably about 4 feet wide. I remember I got super excited almost. Really? After it went off. They just tried to kill me. You little bastards.
There's the response I was waiting for.
It's funny because, Tom, the way you say that, it's like, you know, you think about a soldier that just almost died and he's, you know, amped up and he's like, oh, and you're just like, oh, you tried to kill me, you little son of a gun. Wait till I find you. It's just funny.
Yeah, you got that right.
So, oh, man. So you have that experience, and when you realize that, you know, it was an IED, is there ever a time that you're like, you know, man, like I literally could have died, and you start thinking about the idea of dying itself? Or is that something that just really doesn't kind of hit you because of the training, or you're just not that kind of guy?
I never really thought about it all that much. You know, figured if it happens, you know, I'm not worrying about it anymore.
Yeah, I guess that's the truth. But no, I mean, yeah, that's probably a defense mechanism that enables you to deal with these kind of stressful situations, that you're able to kind of look at it and say, well, you shrug your shoulders and keep moving. You know, I'm still breathing right now, so let's just move forward. But I mean, that's crazy. I mean, that's a crazy event, especially when you think, you know, a truck tire that is, you know, 4 foot tall, you know, getting, you know, blown 50 meters away from the truck. It's like, holy cow, that's a pretty good size explosion. Thankfully, nobody was hurt during that one. Was anybody hurt?
No, we didn't have any casualties in that one, except for my lower back.
Yeah, well, I can understand that. I mean, I my lower back hurts when I just hit a big bump on the highway, which in Pennsylvania, you can't avoid the bumps on the highway. So
that's like every mile.
Yeah. But so I can appreciate that, you know, but I'm glad that nobody was hurt. That's a blessing all by itself.
Yeah. My whole platoon went through the deployment without any casualties, which is pretty awesome.
That's really good.
That is awesome.
So, you know, I don't know if this happened in the timeline, but I know you said you spent about 2 weeks hanging out with British soldiers and drinking heavily. How'd that come about? what are you talking about? I mean, was it like, you know, 2 weeks vacation or what? I mean, why are you hanging out with British soldiers for 2 weeks drinking heavily?
Yeah, this was in Kosovo, actually. The British had this little communication camp up near Pristina. It was like the capital city. So every 2 weeks, our unit would send a bunch of guys up there to do security for them for 2 weeks. You're just, you know, you're usually working the, either you're working the gate or you're doing like these patrols around the perimeter. You're like at the top of this little mountain. And like the view up there is amazing. You're just working, you know, working with these British guys, and every other night they have this little bar there, and it's open to the Americans. But of course, Americans, while they're deploying, aren't technically supposed to drink. but British let us have quote unquote Cokes. Yeah, my Coke of choice was actually a Strongbow. While I was up there, that was pretty fun. Before I got up there, sometimes the American command would make surprise visits up there to try to catch people drinking. So the Brits actually put in this policy requiring a 24-hour advance notice before anyone came up for security reasons.
Very smart.
So we always knew.
So basically, the Brits were looking out for the American soldiers and letting them have some downtime.
Yeah. It was pretty cool.
That's funny. It's like
it's like getting a heads up on a drug test. As a truck driver, tomorrow you're going to have to go in for your random drug screening.
Yeah. Here's our random drug screenings that we're going to do 2 months from now, Brian Merkel, and you're on it. So
exactly.
Just give me a heads up. We're having a random drug test for you in 2 months. Your name might be on it.
Yeah, exactly. But that's actually pretty cool. I mean, it's a stressful situation and a stressful place to be when you're in any place that is any kind of combat related. And so to actually be able to have that downtime to get away, I mean, what the heck? I mean, here we are in the United States. We drive truck for a living and we need downtime. We feel stressed. I get done every morning and I'm like, I'm stressed. I want to go home. I mean, I've just dealt with, 100,000 people on the roadways at the rush hour. So I want to go home and decompress. So I can imagine, what combat is like. You need that time to decompress. So that was smart on the British part to, require, hey, we need to know when you're coming. It's a security thing.
It's like they're looking out for the American soldiers. They're like, these guys don't have a break. Like their military leaders are just on them and on them and on them. Give them some, let's look out for them, Hey, I wonder if they would have done that 200 years ago. I think they would have been a little sore still.
I don't think we were on the same side with the Brits. What I'm saying? I don't think we're friendly.
Yeah, I don't think all was forgiven yet.
No, it was still a sore, it's too early yet.
Yeah.
Too soon?
That's funny. So, Tom, you're working right now, right?
Yeah.
So, I'm assuming you're on the road driving. You mentioned about how when you were driving truck, and I'm assuming this is stateside, this wasn't in the military, but you had mentioned how you might have seen some UFOs in the sky, man. Now, for anybody listening that maybe doesn't know who I am, Google me. No, but I said,
oh boy.
I'm all about that action. So tell me about the UFOs you might have seen.
Yeah. The thing, I'm not 100% sure on either of them, really. It was weird. They're both actually pretty close together, geographically. They're both coming southbound on I-25 through actually just south of Colorado Springs. First one, it was in the winter. It was kind of a icy night. It was cold. There was kind of an icy mist going on. And where the ceiling was really low. So I got just south of Colorado Springs, where it started to get dark. There is this giant kind of orange looking light up to the right by the mountains, kind of. It was super bright. It was lighting up about a quarter of the sky. I mean, it was all hazy and stuff, so you could, really see where the light was going, how much reach it had. I was just looking at it what in the hell is that? It was just sitting perfectly still, and as I got up almost next to it, I could see this other little white light kind of up and to the left of it, but neither one of them were blinking. It wasn't moving at all, and I've been through there hundreds of times before then and hundreds of times since, and I've never seen anything in that area that would explain it. I was hoping it would like start moving around. I was hoping to see some non-ballistic motion out of it, but it just stood still. It was really weird. I have no idea what that was.
Do you think that if you would have stopped the truck and just sat there watching it, you probably would have seen something, or do you think it would have just been sitting there? Because I mean, you saw it more than anybody else saw it, so you kind of, from what I gather when I talk to people who have had UFO experiences, that a lot of times people kind of get this other sense about these things, where a lot of times people will say that they describe it as it felt like it knew that I was looking at it, almost as if whatever they were seeing in the sky had some kind of intelligence, whether the intelligence was on the inside or the actual light itself had some kind of intelligence. What do you think as far as that goes? I mean, do you think this is just some kind of like military type, you know, craft? Do you think there was a natural explanation, extraterrestrial, what?
It could have been anything really, because, you know, Fort Carson's right there. It's actually probably right over Fort Carson. But it was sitting so still, like, you know, nothing, you know, military probably wouldn't have any aircraft out in that weather, you know, that time of night. I just don't know what it was. It's just sitting stock still. I was really hoping it would move so I could tell one way or the other. Like, is this like an actual UFO or is it just a plane or what? But I didn't see any blinking lights or anything. It was just solid light and it was really bright.
Did you ever have a sense of fear that came over you or anything? Or was it just more of a wow kind of thing?
More of a wow. I didn't really get any, like feelings off of it. I was just trying to, you know, figure out logically what this thing could be, because I've never seen anything like it there before.
That's interesting.
And down the road a ways, there's a... I think it's a refinery or something like that. I thought it might be that, but that has a bunch of lights everywhere. It's not just like one single light way up. Yeah, that place is always lit up like a Christmas tree.
Yeah, there's a refinery down around Philly, and it's the same way there. You know, in the middle of the night, you know, you drive up coming up out of Baltimore, going into Tony's, the terminal Tony works at. And that refinery is lit up like, you know, like a freaking Christmas tree all the time.
Is it?
You know, yeah, it's crazy. So, but that's a really neat experience, you know, when you think about it. And that's the beauty of it, you know, it's a UFO. You know, it literally is. I mean, regardless of whether there's an explanation for it or not, right now, you don't know what it was. It is an unidentified, and it was in the air, and it was an object. So, I mean, it covers the bases. And I think that's an interesting thing. You know, I have no preconceived ideas or notions about any of this stuff. I just kind of like, it's fascinating to me.
Do you think, this is a question, you good?
Sorry, that's my radio.
Oh, I got you, okay. I'm sorry, man. I should have known that, but I don't keep CB in my truck, so I don't want to talk to anybody. I don't want anybody talking to me. You know, honestly, though, it's one of those things where with the CB radio, I think we should bring them back in popularity, because I think if most drivers had CBs in their trucks, because a lot of drivers are getting rid of CBs. But if you had CBs in the truck, I think it would avoid pileups, because if something happens down the road, like that bad pileup we had here in PA this past winter, Dad, mm-hmm. I think that probably could have been avoided if somebody would have been able to call ahead and let these guys know that are coming up. Hey, they're, you know, we just had this accident, slow it down. But it's just one after another. And I think that's proof of the fact that most guys aren't having the CB on.
Right. Right.
Yeah. So anyways, back to the UFO thing. You know, do you think that, and this is for Tom, do you think that, as truck drivers, do you think that we're more susceptible to the idea of believing or even seeing UFOs? I mean, obviously, you know, drivers are out there all night, you see some stuff, but even though you see it, doesn't mean that you believe that it's a UFO as far as like the extraterrestrial or some kind of conspiratorial government program. But do you think that truck drivers in general are more susceptible to, you know, looking into these kind of things because we're out on the road all the time? Maybe it's the road that's driving us crazy and we believe these things. I don't know. So
it might almost be a generational thing. I think some of the older guys probably wouldn't. They probably assume it was something else.
Yeah.
I think some younger guys might.
You know, I think nowadays people are more susceptible to believe in UFOs, whether they're truck drivers or not, because of what our own government just this year has come out and said. I mean, just what was it, like a month or two ago from this recording, I mean, the government said that, I think it was to, I can't remember now, I'm drawing a blank as to how this all unfolded, but they basically came out and said, we do have crafts that were not made on planet Earth. That's what they said. And it's like, well, that's kind of crazy. Like, what, like, of course they're going to say it in 2020 when the world's, you know, going bananas to begin with. Like, everything is backwards now. What do you got to say, Dad? Go ahead. Just say it.
Just, you know, in my head, I'm just thinking, okay, so where are they made? I mean, is there a sticker on it? Is there like a, you know, a company emblem that says, you know, Mars yes. Motors or something? You know, we have stuff that's not made here. Okay. Yeah. You know, then show us. I mean, yeah. If you're going to tell me about it, show me, you know, don't just, you know,
I all right. So,
you know, what, I'm just, and I'm just
I hear,
saying.
No, I hear what you're saying. And so what they should be saying is we have crafts in our possession that seem like it was made of technology that we don't know about.
Yes, that would make more sense.
Because what we really need to find out does Russia have access to technology that we don't have access to?
Right.
That's more scary to me than any extraterrestrial scenario.
Yep, you got that right.
If China has the ability with crafts that they're making that we don't even know how to begin going about, that's scary.
Right.
That's scary.
Right.
I don't want to be around for that party.
And what does the Venus vehicle emblem look like? If we got vehicles not made here, you know, I mean, yeah, but I say all those things tongue in cheek. I hope everybody takes that, you know, understands that
No, in today's world, Dad, they're going to take you serious and they're going to cancel you. Thanks a lot. You just canceled Himmerlane because you said something that somebody in the world took offense to.
Look, I talked to you a while ago before we even started Himmerlane. I've had my own experience.
Yeah.
And I was a kid, and I even, you know, I even talked to my older brother just to make sure, is this what we saw, you know? And he reiterated the story to me. So it's not like I, you know, like I'm coming at this thing from a, you know, a total novice point of view. I can appreciate what Tom is talking about because I can't explain what we saw.
Yeah.
You know,
your brother, my uncle, he drives truck too. We're going to have him in the studio one of these days for an interview.
Yeah.
And, I think we should bring that up.
Yeah,
that'd be cool. All three of us talk about it.
Yeah,
since you two like saw it, I'm the guy who does all this stuff.
Yep.
I think it'd be fun to have a conversation about that too.
Yeah, it would. It would.
But yeah, I don't know.
I can't wait.
Yeah, well, you know, it will probably happen sometime in the next couple months.
I'd say. Very short future.
Yeah, bring them down. But yeah, so I, when it comes to the UFO thing, you know, I don't know. But here's the thing: I don't think that these things, if they're coming from another planet or galaxy, I don't think that they're coming from Venus, Dad.
I know.
But here's the thing. I think that if there are extraterrestrials and they've visited planet Earth, I think that they're here now. I think they live among us and we just, we don't know it. But hey, this is the ramblings of a conspiracy theorist.
You know, see, that is the beauty of the term, is it may totally be terrestrial from this planet. I don't know what it is. It may be from another planet. I don't know what it is. It's an unidentified flying object. And that is
what,
so there's not, you know, it does cover
when you go in it, when you go in and out of state, what do you call it? Is it inner or intra?
Enter.
Yeah. So they're inner terrestrials. They're interterrestrials. They go back and forth.
Yeah,
okay,
they're not intra.
Right. They were extra. Now they're inner.
Now they're inner.
They're not intra because they go back and forth. They don't stay here.
That's correct.
There we go. Combining the trucking industry lingo to the UFO.
The aliens are truck drivers from outer space. They're trucking the galaxy. This is awesome. It all ties together.
I hope they have to market on their UFO CDLs or whatever they have to. Do you think that extraterrestrials have to have special licensing? I mean, listen, from their planet of origin, the in order to fly the craft to planet Earth and start their whole invasion process, do they have like a license that says that they're qualified to drive this thing? know,
probably get a class, like a class M license for intergalactic space or something like that.
You know what I want to, if that's the case, I want to be on the intergalactic DOT team.
How fun would that be?
That would be awesome.
You know, like your anti-gravity device is not totally up to regulation. We're going to need you to fix that, and we're putting you out of service until you get your anti-gravity device up to par. call back to your planet and have them send another craft out to fix it.
You know? Wow, is this conversation taking a turn?
Yeah, it's fun.
Oh my word.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, but it's fun to think about. I mean, Will Smith didn't need to have a special license to fly the crafts in the movie.
Yeah, that's true.
You know?
That's true.
He's punching aliens.
Neither him nor Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah. I mean, punching aliens, welcoming to Earth, you know? Fat ladies singing, smoking cigars, flying UFOs, you know? It's like life,
oh, my word.
You know?
So, Tom. Back to you. Back to our regularly scheduled programming.
this conversation's gone off the rails a while ago. I'm not even worried about it. So we're just chilling.
You said you had a couple of experiences. Was the other one in the same area? Is that the other one by Carson?
Yeah, it was in the same area. I was driving south again on another night. This time it was kind of a clear night. I was just kind of zoned out listening to probably you, actually.
I was gonna say, hopefully say Hammer Lane Legends.
Yeah, professionals. Because I always switch to my spooky shows at night.
I do the same but thing. I literally do.
Yeah, I was getting kind of zoned out. I was passing this what looked like a bunch of like cell phone towers. You know, like especially at night, you just see like them red lights up in the sky.
Yeah.
I was coming up to him, and one of these lights just did like one single movement over to the over the interstate in front of me, and just blinked out. Like what? It wasn't blinking or anything. It was just a solid light went right over the interstate and just went out. And the thing is, I've never seen a group of cell phone towers around there. Like I looked since then, and there are no cell towers that as close to the road as it looked like these things were. I was going, these things were maybe like on my 2 o'clock position. It wasn't very far off the road at all.
I mean, you know the area, so it's like you know what's typical in that area. For instance, I might have said it on the show before. I know I've said it on my other show. You know, driving truck in the Philadelphia area, if I'm coming down the turnpike down 276 from Bensalem to the King of Prussia exit, and it's wintertime, say 8:30 at night, so it's dark out, you're going to see a line of lights moving through the sky every night. And it's because it's the Philadelphia airport, and the planes have to be a certain distance away from each other as they come in for landing. And they all come in from the same direction. So, I mean, if say they have to come in from the south, but they're originally coming in from the north, they have to go past the Philadelphia airport to turn it around to come in from the south, right? So they're all in a line. And so if you're not familiar with the area and you're seeing this in the sky, you're like, we're getting invaded, you know? But, you know, people who are from the area, they know what to see in the sky. So, I mean, if you drive that area all the time, you know what's in that area. You know if it's a cell phone tower. You know if it's something normal you see or not, you know?
Yeah. I drive that stupid I-25 corridor almost every day unless I'm going up in the mountains. Yeah, I know what all is supposed to be there, even with all the military stuff.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense.
I can usually identify the military aircraft. Mm-hmm.
So, Tom, before we get out of here, have you ever seen anything crazy from the road, like a wild accident or anything like that? I mean, I know you've only been driving for 2.5 years and stuff, but I mean, you might have seen something that's pretty, you know, crazy.
I hit a deer with my trailer once.
Ooh, That sounds juicy.
Yeah. I actually had a couple of dudes going through there. His Highway 50 is like this old two-lane highway going through the mountains. I was coming back one night, and this, of course, there's, you know, there's always deer through there. One of them ran out, hit the side of my truck, flipped underneath the trailer, and I pulled over, and there's a guy driving behind me. He pulled over too. He said, "Dude, that deer went underneath your trailer. I saw that whole trailer bounce up in the air." Like, holy crap. There wasn't any damage on the trailer, though. You know, it bent one of my wheel covers, but that was about it.
Yeah, yeah, they can do, you know, I'm glad there was no damage to the trailer, because that, you know, that just does nothing but hold you up. I was, I'm just going to give you this really quick deer story that I had when I first started really doing the road for the company I'm with, running line haul for Pitt, Ohio. I was coming from Washington, PA, back to Allentown. I was running with an older driver, and a couple of deer ran out across in between us, but they ran right under, one of them ran right underneath his, ran across the road halfway, got to the median at the wall, turned around, ran back, and ran underneath his trailer and basically exploded. And I was behind him.
Oh.
I mean, it was gross. He and I pulled over a little bit further down the road, and it's like, you know, I'm picking stuff off of my windshield and trying to clean, and he's picking stuff off of the, you know, I off of his ICC bumper and everything else. I was just like, oh my word.
This you have a real bad day after that.
Thank you, Susan.
So I can appreciate, you know, when you hit a deer, it's not even, you know, you whack them with your trailer, it can get messy. It can get real messy real quick.
Well, that's a show, buddy. We're really glad that you were here to listen to it, and we hope you enjoyed it. Dad, what can people do if they enjoyed the show?
Well, you know what, Tony? They can share the show. We enjoy doing it, and we hope you enjoy listening to it. And if you do enjoy listening to it, share it. Share it on Facebook. Share it on Twitter. Share it on Instagram. Share it with a friend. Share it with a relative. Share the show. And also with that, go on to HammerLaneLegends.com. Look at the gear. See what we have there. Create a conversation around a piece of gear. Enjoy it. Wear it. Use it. That's what we want you to do.
Use it and abuse it.
Well, don't abuse it. Just use it.
Well, if you abuse it, that means you're using it heavily.
All right, if that's what you're going to do.
Use it hard.
Yeah, don't hardly use it.
Use it hard. Yeah, don't hardly use it. What can I say? I mean, it's just like... Jack, bring in the music.
I'm just sitting on your front porch, wondering how could I be so far from my home. And my mind is somewhere else, but when I find it, I'll patch up where it's been blown. Now I'm just floating on the breeze, and I feel I'm falling like these leaves. I must be cornerstone. Oh, but when I reach that ground, I'll share this peace of mind I found. I can feel it in my bones, but it's gonna take a little time for me to set that parking brake and let myself unwind. Shine that light on. Tell you my stories. Shine on me, and I will find a song. I will sing it just for you. And now I've been moving way too fast on the runaway train with a worn so thin that they're damn near gone. I guess now they just weren't built to last. Yeah, I'm gonna try to make sense of what I can, of where I'm going. Oh, and where I'll be. Shine that light on me. I'll sit and tell you my story. Shine on me, and I'll be find a song. I will sing it just for you, and I will find the words to help you make it through. If you call my name,
Hey Tim, how you doing? It's Tony.
Hey, how are you doing?
Tim.
Tom.
No, Tom. No, it's Tim.
Tom, yes.
Yeah. Oh, it's Tom.
Tom.
Oh, I'm looking. Yeah. At, I thought. Okay, so that's okay. Here's the thing. I was looking to see if I could find you on Facebook because sometimes I do interviews over the Messenger, and I typed in Tom. But it gave me somebody with your name, only it was Tim, and I'm looking at that guy's profile, which apparently isn't you. So,
yeah, they actually kicked me off of Facebook.
They did. Is that because you're saying naughty things?
Not really. I'm not actually sure what I did. I was part of like some of the kind of the Boogaloo groups. I think that might have been why they did it.
Yeah, maybe. I think
I know they had like that crackdown on it.
Well, Facebook, Twitter, all those companies, they are very much trying to take away your right to say anything you want to say as an American. So there's that.
Yeah, I'm in Florida now.
Where are you from?
I'm from Arkansas originally.
Okay.
I live in Colorado though.
Colorado. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Colorado, at least it's legal to smoke weed out there. Right away.
Yeah, there's
there,
a lot
right?
of that here.
Listen, I don't think if Pennsylvania, if it was legal in Pennsylvania, I'm not even sure I would partake, but I just want to have the right to be able to do it if I want to do it.
Yeah, you should have that choice.
That's what I think. I think the government needs to get their hands out of everything. And, you know, nobody ever died from a little weed.
This is the world according to Tony.
Hey, I'm just saying.
I agree with you on a lot of stuff.
But not everything? I'm offended.
Yeah.
You're all good, Tom. Trust me, you're all good.
My dad agrees with me on everything. Don't you? Dad?
The old man has left the building.
Oh, man. All right. Well, Tom, man. So, first of all, I want to say your voice doesn't sound annoying at all.
No, not at all.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Nope.
I think you're, what'd you say? Was a drill sergeant or something like that told you that?
It was a platoon sergeant, actually.
I think he was probably just trying to be mean.
You sound fine.
You sound normal to me.
Yeah, your voice is fine.
I was expecting when you answered the phone, you were gonna be like, "Hello."
<You know? laughs> Yeah, so we were having that little kind of conversation between ourselves. Like, I wonder what this guy's going to sound like. Yeah. I mean, if he thinks his voice sounds,
if you go out of the way to say it in an email when you're introducing yourself, oh, by the way, my voice is really annoying, and there's that. I was thinking, oh man, I wonder what this is going to sound like. Is it going to sound like Kermit the Frog? Hi, you know, like, I don't know.
No. So. You sound totally fine. Your voice is fine for radio.
Thanks.
Yeah, you should consider doing a podcast.
There you go.
I think everybody should do a podcast, though.
Heck yeah.
I actually did start one. I got like an episode in, and I really hated doing the editing.
Yeah.
Because I just listened to my voice.
Actually, one of my favorite parts to do is the post-production.
He just liked to hear his own voice.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. I enjoy hearing myself talk. And on this past week's member show for the confessionals, on the outro, I'm like, okay, everybody, thanks for listening, comment, whatever, whatever. And I was listening back to it, and what was that?
I don't know.
But I was listening back to it, and I'm hearing myself talk, and I decided to talk to myself back to the recording. So I record myself once, and then I listen to myself and record myself again talking to myself, and like I was having a conversation with myself. and then I after the outro music, I played that outro.
that's just wrong, dude.
It's fun.
That's wrong.
It's fun.
Look, if it weren't for Jackson doing our editing, yeah, you know, I wouldn't, you know what I mean? Like, if I had to edit this, I'm with you, Tom. It'd have been a one show, and I'm like, okay, this is just too hard, and I'm out.
Yeah.
So, Jackson, Jack, Tony's younger brother, my youngest son, he does the editing for us, which is a good thing.
Yeah, it is, because it's time consuming. Even though he's not perfected it yet. I told him this past week, I said, hey, you know, this, that, and the other, but he's getting better.
He's busy letting his hair grow out.
Yeah, he looks like a hippie.
He does. You just seen him last night.
Yeah,
he put it up in a ponytail.
Oh,
I was like, you got to give me, I was like, man,
all you got to do is take a snapshot of that. You know, when he's not
your
looking.
Your sister did. Good. You should text Tanya for the picture.
It's gonna be fun.
Yeah,
it's gonna be fun. It's gonna be fun because I can use some stuff with Photoshop. It's gonna be fantastic.
I better not ask her for it. Jackal's Ruby.
No, I'm gonna ask her for it.
Okay,
I'm already thinking about taking his head and putting it on a pony. For the ponytail, it'd be great. Has some rainbows shooting off in the background, you know, it'd be great.
Yeah, it'll be great.
Yeah, and then we could put some kind of like cheesy music behind the picture and make it a video, and you know, have some stars falling in the background and just real, you know, bedazzled.
Bedazzled.
Oh man.